Welcome to Tell Me Your Story, New Paradigms for a New World. I'm Richard Dugan, your host. It's great to have you on the program today. Have you with us as we bring you New Paradigms for a New World, giving you choices and knowledge of those choices to help make your dreams come true. We come your way every Saturday from 3 to 4 p.m. Pacific Time. We stream live at richarddugan.com and newspress.com. We are also rebroadcast at 3 p.m. Pacific Time on a2zen.fm. That is a website. And we archive these programs at richarddugan.com, the radio shows page. So we encourage you to check out all of those different venues. Well, you know, the focus of today's program, I think, and I say this seriously but also tongue-in-cheek, is going to be very entertaining, and I hope that you find it as well entertaining. We hope that you will go to the website that we are going to be giving you in just a couple of moments. We've had on this program on numerous occasions throughout the, and I shudder sometimes when I think about this, in the almost five and a half years that we've been doing this program, that we've had people from the entertainment industry or representing it talking about transformational or creative conscious programming, movies, television, even radio for that matter. I'm hoping that this program falls under that category. Well, today is no exception. And we are going to have someone very special on the program who's going to talk to us about something you may not have heard of before. It's called GATE, and that stands for the Global Alliance for Transformational Entertainment. And I'm hoping, John, and is it Rotz's last name, that I have pronounced that correctly?
You have, yes.
I'm glad. I will tell you, as I've told my listeners, it is the height of disrespect to not learn how to pronounce someone's name, first or last for that matter, or to, as they did at Ellis Island at the turn of the last century, to change someone's name because they couldn't pronounce it. A whole different mentality way back then. We're in a new century, and I think that we need to start showing that level of respect and honor to one another by learning how to pronounce someone's name. I mean, how hard can it really be? But I think one of the more difficult things, John, is to find movies and programming that we want to watch. I have to say that I am a subscriber to a number of things. I am a subscriber to that very well-known a film provider, a movie provider, Netflix. I am a subscriber to the DirecTV satellite service, of which HBO is a part of. And if I can't find anything to watch from those three sources, then maybe there really isn't anything worth watching on. And yet, I'm going to tell you about the last movie that I saw. And I think it falls under this category. And I think this is where we're going to go with the program today. And we're going to talk about gatecommunity.org, which is the website we want people to go to. The last movie that I saw that I was actually watching from as many different levels as I consciously could was The Life of Pi. Phenomenal film. The subtext, the metaphors, all of that that went on throughout from beginning to end. And I remember somebody saying, oh, yeah, I know, but it's such a long movie. I completely forgot about how long it was.
Yeah.
That's the latest example for me of a movie that I would watch again and again. I would have in my library.
Yeah.
But I wouldn't have a lot of these shoot 'em ups. Zero Dark Thirty would not be in my library. The Hurt Locker would not, and no disrespect to the director. What was the other movie that she made won an Oscar for, and I cannot remember. Hurt Locker. I did see that one with my wife. It was a good movie. I won't take anything away, but it didn't resonate with me because I didn't want to see people destroying themselves and other human beings. Tell me about the impetus of GATE, because this is extraordinary. With everything else that's going on and all of the different things that we featured on this program, this seems like a spot on what we need right now.
Yes. Well, when you ask about the impetus for GATE, I would say that it is consciousness itself. It is consciousness wanting to move into the world and express itself through every available channel, so to speak. And I use that word in the broad sense, not just a television channel. I believe that we live in a time when perennial wisdom is emerging, and it's emerging in every area or field of human aspiration and endeavor. So what happens is you find individuals in business, in education, in healthcare, and in entertainment and media who have probably or possibly been on a seeker's path for a period of time, and they desire to bring their inner discoveries, if you will, to their work. They want to imbue their work with that inner aspect. And by doing so, that work becomes a source of consciousness expansion, if you will, for other people who partake of that particular expression. So I think the impetus of GATE is wisdom itself. It is wisdom wanting to reestablish itself in ourselves, in our culture, and in the world. So I believe that's what brought GATE about.
Now you say reestablish itself. Does that mean that at one time in human history that we were kind of there, if you will, in that higher consciousness level?
Yes. Thank you for picking that up. Well, certainly there are certain understandings in the world that we pass through periods or eras when wisdom may be more lively or less lively. And from what I understand, from my readings, from my explorations, we are passing through a time right now when the emergence of wisdom has been extraordinarily lively for a period of decades. And now we're coming to a point when the actual, I guess we could say, the implementation of that wisdom is about to come into play, where more and more people are drinking deep of the cup of wisdom and bringing that into the world. At GATE, we have a belief, if you will, that entertainment media content has a role and a responsibility to promote personal, social, and global transformation. And it just so happens that there are a lot of people, let's call them content creators, and it could be a filmmaker, it could be a fine artist, it could be a poet, it could be a musician or a singer-songwriter, anyone in the entertainment, media, or arts communities who wants to use their particular expression to help uplift, enlighten other people, they are people who would belong to GATE, be a part of GATE, because they realize that these expressions are powerful and they're influential, and they can help bring people together, and they can help lead people to new places that they've not previously explored. So it's a very exciting time when the arts and entertainment and media is essentially starting to reinvent itself.
You know, I find it interesting as a purveyor of that of said entertainment, mm-hmm. as in essence we all are, that I do find myself in somewhat of a, I'm going to call it a frustrated place, because in programs that we've done, as I've described it, we are looking for those, as I have described it, those new ways of living. Someone say, well, what do you mean? What's wrong with the ways that we're living today? And I say, well, then just look around you. Tell me that they're working. Tell me that they're really working, and I'll shut the show down and we won't do any more. But the fact of the matter is that there are people who are literally dying from the lifestyle, let alone the actions of others. And it doesn't have to be this way. As a matter of fact, I remember talking with someone about the economic system, whether you want to talk about the U.S. or the global economic system. I say, who said that it had to be this way? The stress that we have put ourselves under, not someone else did this to us, we did it to ourselves, is literally killing the species. through the stress, the obesity, the dysfunction, and the list goes on. And that's one of the reasons why I am really excited about what you and Gate are doing, because if nothing more, and forgive me for using this pun, but you're providing a gateway to a different way of thinking, even if it's just for an hour and a half to 2 hours.
Yes, absolutely. And, you know, let me share with you, when the idea for Gate first emerged, and it had been persisting for a while, and I resisted it, I tried to ignore it, and it didn't work. It kept coming back stronger and stronger until one day I asked Eckhart Tolle, whom I'd been working with for a number of years. I shared the idea for Gate with him and told him what my experience was, that this thing keeps persisting. It seems like it wants to be born in the world. And I asked him, you know, should I do this? And he said, yes. And I asked him, you know, if I do it, will you speak at our first event? And he said, of course. And then I went to my friend and colleague, Jim Carrey, and I asked him if he would co-host the event with me, and he said, yes, of course. So I knew we had a show. But here's, related to what you just said, here's why I'm bringing this point up. Many people doubted whether there would be an interest in this transformational power of entertainment and media. And I can certainly understand that, because we're so identified with the conventional that anything of a visionary nature seems outlandish and undoable.
Yeah.
But we decided, let's do this event and test John's sanity and test the waters and see how real it is. So
yeah.
we originally, CAA offered us their auditorium, which seats about 200 people. And I thanked them and turned it down, and I said it wasn't big enough. And the people around me said, what, not big enough? I mean, geez, if we can find a couple hundred people who are, you know, transformationally oriented in the entertainment media business, we'll be doing really well. And I said, I don't believe that. I don't think that's true. I think there are thousands and thousands and thousands of people in the entertainment, media, and arts community who are completely transformationally oriented. So we held out. We ended up doing our event at the Fox Studios, on the Fox Studios lot, the Zanuck Theater, seats 500. We filled every seat, and we turned almost 1,600 people away.
Wow.
That showed us that there is interest. And subsequently, we've now had inquiries from people in 70 countries asking to start chapters of Gate, and I believe this year we'll open up our New York and San Francisco chapters and probably do a co-event with another organization in London. It's clear to me that there are lots of people in these businesses who are themselves transformationally oriented, and if they had the opportunity, they would connect and collaborate with other people who share that same mind space, if you will, and would want to produce this kind of content.
Well, I have to say that I did go to the website and I looked at several different videos, including one with you, and I was actually watching the one with Jim Carrey where he disclosed an incredible epiphany of his own.
Yes.
That he had transcended the ego, which most everybody in the room got and laughed.
Yeah.
And I thought, that's funny, because in a manner of speaking, that's kind of what we're all trying to do. But if you're in the entertainment industry, it's an oxymoron to transcend ego as an actor, as a comedian, and so forth, because you're out there to get attention. And this draws me to something else. And again, I mean no disrespect to Jodie Foster, but I was watching the Golden Globes the other night, and I didn't know where she was going until she got to this part where she was going to disclose some, I don't know what. And of course, it was only after the fact that I found out what it was that she disclosed, because apparently the networks didn't deem it airable. And I thought, Jodie, why do you think we care? So, you know, whether you're single or you're a lesbian, I don't care. It doesn't make any difference to me. I like your body of work. I like what you do. So, you know, and that kind of goes back to that whole thing of transcending the ego. It's like, why do we need to come out of anything? We need to transform the planet. Coming out doesn't transform it, at least not from my perspective. Can you maybe shed some light on this as far as GATE is concerned? Because it really, GATE transcends the ego in the sense that you're not happy with the way things are. That's why GATE exists.
Well, truth be told, and I'll address your question in a moment, but, you know, Chris Jordan is a brilliant photographer and filmmaker. And his work basically takes the ultra-abstract and makes it ultra-concrete. And he does so in such interesting ways. And I encourage your listeners to check out his work, chrisjordan.com. But Chris and I were having a conversation not long ago about grief as a doorway to transformation. And of course, many people do not necessarily want to go through that door because it's grief.
It's painful.
And they want happiness and joy.
Yeah.
But I've been on a seeker's path since 1967. And I can just start to attest now that I don't feel that that the wholeness that I experience is complete if I still notice suffering in the world, if I still feel suffering in the world. And there's a kind of grief arising from that that I don't want to push away. I want to embrace it. I want it to be a part of me. And I think that, coming around to Jodie Foster now, and I was a manager for many years in the entertainment business, and I can tell you that it's a tough, tough business. Maybe the toughest business on at least in the United States in many regards, because there are so many holes to fall into individually, and in terms of your career and personally, spiritually, et cetera. And I actually, I felt quite a great deal of compassion and empathy for her because, I think she was trying to express certain personal realities. And when you have a lot of advisors advising you, and oftentimes their guidance is contradictory to one another, it can be confusing. And I think, I don't know, of course, but my sense is that what she was trying to communicate was the product, what ended up being the product of, or what ended up, she said, being the product of several different people giving input on it.
Mm.
And so it came out jumbled and not clear and almost coded in a certain way. But I feel, she's been in the business a long time, and this is not a forgiving business, and it has as much, as many politics associated with it as, Washington, D.C.
So, nice comparison.
And by the way, I think, I think Jody, and I don't know her personally, but I think, that many of her works actually have been transformational.
Oh, absolutely. Well, Contact.
Pardon me?
Contact in particular.
Example. Nell is a good example, I think.
Mm-hmm.
There have been many works. And by the way, that leads us to this idea, too. People oftentimes ask, for examples of transformational films, let's say. But, we can actually, and by the way, it's not as if Hollywood hasn't produced transformational content. Obviously, it has. And we could go back to Passion of Joan of Arc. We could go to It's a Wonderful Life.
Mm-hmm.
These are transformational films.
Yes.
They speak to us. They resonate with us at the deepest level. They help us touch our own humanity. They help us touch humanity in others. They allow us to feel the various modes of emotion, whether it's compassion or sadness or empathy or peace or many, many different modes. So Hollywood has been doing it. GATE is here to say, look, guys, we're not asking you to change. Keep doing what you're doing. We're just asking you to move over a little bit, make room, make a little bit of space for this content that could be deemed to be transformational content. Because guess what? there's a huge, huge audience out there, probably certainly in the tens of millions, maybe even in the hundreds of millions, who want this kind of content and are not currently being serviced by Hollywood in that way.
Yeah, and I would be one of those.
Me too.
I'm not a and again, if the genre of film that you, the listener, are interested in, that I'm not interested in, doesn't make it bad. I'm not saying that it's a bad genre. I'm just saying I'm not interested. John, I use the analogy of anything like this, the analogy of a chocolate cake sitting on the kitchen table. And there it is in all its splendor. And you walk in and you go, gee, you know, I don't really want any chocolate cake right now. It doesn't make the cake bad. It just means you're not interested. Well, I don't like the vampire and the horror and the death and destruction kinds of films. And I try to stay away from the news as much as I can, but it's hard.
Well, and by the way, you're bringing up a really important point about media diet.
Yes.
And the other thing, you know, in the Vedas, which are these, you know, records of human experience,
yes,
from India,
mm-hmm,
there's a beautiful principle from the Rig Veda that states knowledge is structured in consciousness and knowledge is different in different states of consciousness. A corollary to that would be that entertainment media are structured in consciousness and entertainment media are different in different states of consciousness. So
yes,
what this means is, you know, at one stage of, we could say, development or expression, we have an interest in a particular type of content. But time passes, and perhaps our tastes mature and become more seasoned, and we require a different type of content. And so I think, you know, much of the content that's out there today is an expression of where the culture is. I remember this spiritual teacher once said that that government is a pure and innocent reflection of the collective consciousness of the people. And in a sense, I think that somewhat applies to entertainment and media content. However, the other side of that, you know, let's talk about, maybe talk about media for a second.
Absolutely.
Yeah. So, you know, I make a distinction between entertainment and media. And by media, I mean the websites you visit for your information, the television shows, the news programming, the newspapers, the magazines, the e-newsletters, etc. And when you're a journalist and you go to journalism school, you learn to define news by a particular set of values that include conflict, controversy, celebrity, novelty, impact. There are about 20 values. I, at Gate, we believe that these values, it's not that they don't have a place, but they've become outmoded.
Mm-hmm.
We can no longer look at news, and you know, it's typified these days by the expression, if it bleeds, it leads.
Mm-hmm.
And news people, journalists will tell you, but that's what people want. Well, I don't believe that's true. I believe that's what they've become conditioned to want.
Yes.
That which we give our attention to grows strongest in our lives.
Yes.
And if we're constantly being fed a media diet of doom and gloom, we come to accept that as the norm, because we've divorced ourselves from the roots of true media expression, and it's much grander than that. We are calling for the adoption of a set of media values that includes archetypal, universal, humanistic, holistic values to help better define a broader sense of the news that will give us hope, that will encourage us, that will share incredible discoveries, solutions to the problems facing the planet today.
Yeah.
And now, it better serves who we become and who we want to become.
Indeed. I would even add to that that there are times, and I did not do it at the beginning of this program, but there are some shows, some broadcasts that I do, where I will give this warning at the beginning of the program, and it's not because of the content specifically. And that is, once you've heard this program, it's too late. You cannot unhear it. So be forewarned. Well, you should take the same advice about everything that you see and hear and expose yourself to. You have control.
Beautiful.
Over what you're exposed to.
Beautiful.
And going to what you were just speaking to, we had a fire here back in October of 2012 here in the Santa Barbara area up in the foothills.
Yes, I remember.
And one gentleman was receiving phone calls at his home from, of all places, NPR. And they were asking him to give them reports about what was happening. Well, apparently his reports weren't dramatic enough because they wanted to know how many people had been injured or killed, how many buildings had been burned to the ground, and so and how many firefighters were injured in the process of trying to fight this thing. Well, no structures were lost, nobody was injured or killed, and the fire was put out within about 14 to 18 hours. And it was like, really? You mean to tell me that you won't go on the air with the facts because they're not dramatic enough? And that goes to what you're talking about. If it's not bleeding, we're not going to lead with it. It's as one of our broadcasters here says that, the people don't want to hear about the 575 airplanes that landed safely. Well, you don't have to tell them about that, but you also don't have to over-exaggerate or what have you, the one that did come down and injured or killed X number of people. You know, pardon the expression, beat a dead horse. But what we do want to do is come back after our break, John, and talk a little bit about some of the people who are involved, not only in GATE, but also involved in creating these transformational programs. And I have to say that there are some comedies that I think on television that I think are transformational. One in particular, because I actually know a physicist who has watched the television program Big Bang and has told me everything they talk about in the realm of science is 100% spot on. So then I give the actors credit for being able to pronounce half the stuff that they're saying. So let alone the writers for being able to spell it, for that matter. But we will come back and talk more about that in just a moment. I'm Richard Dugan with John Rotz. He is the founder of GATES, and you can find out more by going to gatescommunity.org. I'm Richard Dugan. This is Tell Me Your Story. Stay right where you are.
Tell me your stories.
We are about understanding on this program, trying to understand where you're coming from, where we're going to, where our guests' perspectives are coming from. And to do that, we have to talk with them. Well, we're doing just that. We're talking with John Rotz. He is the founder of GATE, and it is the Global Alliance for Transformational Entertainment. You can go to gatecommunity.org, and you can find out more. I had on this program, John, a couple of times, I've had a gentleman, Brent Merchant. You may or may not be familiar with him. He is a conscious creative film. He calls himself analyst. He's not a critic. And what he does is he puts together a list of movies that he believes, based upon certain criterion, are, I'll use your term because it's easier to say, transformational, that are making a difference. And when you mention certain movie titles, certain emotions come up. When you mentioned It's a Wonderful Life, certain emotions come up, you know. And yeah, and you know what? I didn't see it this year, which is strange. This holiday season, did not see it again this year, but I think that I've seen it so many times I can actually run it through my own film projector in my head. But I think that there are television programs, and I lean more towards comedies. I want to laugh. And I find even comedies like Big Bang Theory, even though I'm a bit put off by the chiding and the criticizing, even amongst friends, that I still enjoy some of the dynamics that do go on, where they have these little mini epiphanies every so often, or even for that matter, I actually understand what what I think it's Schrodinger's box, I think it is, or something like that, having to do with a cat in a box, and you don't know whether it's dead or alive. It could be either or. And they use that as a metaphor for something else in the program, but they've actually taught me some theory of physics. So I'm getting educated from that standpoint. as to maybe how the universe works, or from a philosophical standpoint, you know, where we're coming from and where we're going to. What about the aspect of comedy? One in particular also, Midnight in Paris. Now, the reason I loved that movie was because it did not have a pat ending. It did not end the way I expected it to. That's what I really like about movies.
Yes, absolutely.
Talk to us a little bit about, say, the aspect of creating, whether it be consciously or even subconsciously, transformational films, whether they be box office big money makers, Oscar winners, or they just come and go, and now they're available on Netflix or whatever movie outlet you choose to get them from.
Well, again, in this regard, I have to come back to consciousness, and then I would visit the idea of intention. You know, I'm going to use as an example Will Arndt, who was, you know, the creator of What the Bleep Do We Know.
Mm-hmm.
And just use that as an example because it's close to home. My company promoted the film, and I know Will. Will is someone who has been a seeker for a long time. And he also had personal interests in filmmaking. And those interests were more than simply a hobby. I mean, he had a sincere desire to make a film. And, you know, he wanted to make a film that we would call transformational, because he had, you know, his journey led him down certain pathways, and he discovered certain things about the nature of life, and he wanted to share that knowledge with other people. And his particular, you know, chosen venue for that sharing was to make a film. So here's a filmmaker who wants to bring into the film, the process of making a film, the idea of transformation. And he wants to imbue his film, his creation, with that consciousness. So consciousness and intention are two ingredients, probably the first two ingredients, that go into the creation of what we would deem to be kind of a pure transformational film. Now, there are other transformational films made by filmmakers who may not have any interest in transformation at all. They simply want to tell a good story, and they happen to be excellent storytellers, and whether they know it or not, the story that they're telling would be seen by those of us who are transformationally oriented as being transformational. But they may not necessarily have that particular consciousness themselves, nor is it their intention to necessarily create a transformational film. It's more like it just happened.
Yeah.
So the type of film that I believe you're alluding to is more of the intentional type of film, where the filmmaker, he or she, has a particular experience. Perhaps they are on a seeker's path, and they've unveiled consciousness within themselves to a great degree. And given that their work in life is to be a filmmaker and to express themselves in that way, they ended up creating a film that you or I or probably many or most of your listeners would watch and say, wow, that's amazing, and it really touched me deeply, and, you know, it inspired me, it enlightened me, it awakened me, it made me feel more toward, you know, my fellow human beings, or, you know, what the experience is.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that type of film is actually being made more and more. You know, there are many more people in this space, which we could call the body-mind-spirit space or the cultural creative space,
mm-hmm.
who are content creators. And, of course, books have been around a long time, you know, and so has what is called New Age music has been around a long time. But, you know, the idea of bringing this kind of orientation, this kind of perspective to films and to television programming is a bit newer, and you know, it's, there are many, many challenges inherent in trying to do this, for sure.
Well, I know that going back to the early days, and I think this primarily cropped up in the 50s, in terms of movies being made, and the fact that businesses were trying to market, even, well, back then, as obviously, so they would put in every 24th frame, they would put in an ad or a picture of their product or what have you.
Right.
Well, you don't have to worry about that anymore, because now you have what is everybody knows as product placement within the movie.
Yes.
You know, quite honestly, you don't get much more subliminal than that. But I'm wondering if somebody makes a movie that is not necessarily for distribution and it's not going to be shown in the theaters, it's just on a DVD or maybe available on the internet. Do the same rules apply? In other words, I know that this is a little different part of the genre, if you will. But there are people who are out there making all kinds of films and documentaries and visual arts projects and so forth. And I know that there is a concern. You kind of used the term drinking from the cup, and the first thought that came to mind was, oh my God, are we drinking the Kool-Aid? Because I know that some people are going to accuse Gate and others of doing just that, of drinking the metaphysical New Age Kool-Aid to try to – we don't know what you're – what are you trying to transform is, yes, entertainment, but to what end? What is the end result? And I'm not getting that there is really an end that
– Well, you know, I don't know that there's an end per se, but again, I think it has to do with sharing – perennial wisdom with the world, mm-hmm. sharing wisdom that has withstood the tests of time, sharing wisdom that is true for all people in all times and all places,
mm-hmm.
letting people make of that what they will. We, you know, this is not religion. We're
right.
not interested at all in dictating the kinds of films that people should watch. And by the way, this brings up a brief story. A couple of years ago, a film came out. You may remember it, Soul Surfer?
Yes.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So I wasn't going to go see that film because it was a faith-based film and I didn't really have the interest. But a friend of mine encouraged me to go see it, so I did. And I have to say that, it treated, you know, Christianity well. It didn't come across as being heavy-handed at all. And I enjoyed the film. And it was important for me to see it, and I had an epiphany as a result of watching it, and that was this, that what is called in the business faith-based films, they are a cousin to transformational films. What's the difference? Faith-based films tend to be exclusive. There is an implicit belief that Christianity and Jesus are the primary means of awakening, we could say.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas in transformational offerings, it's more about being inclusive. Perhaps the idea of paths are many, truth is one, would be more appropriate in this genre. But the transformational film and media movement can learn a lot from the faith-based movement. They've been doing it for quite a long time, and they've really done a fantastic job of bringing this kind of entertainment to huge numbers of people, and it's what I hope to do through Gate, and that is to bring transformational content to the people who desire it.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't want to speak only to the so-called choir. I hope that the content that gets generated as a result of, you know, people in this genre coming together as content creators and collaborating, I hope that their efforts, their products, will speak well beyond the choir and touch people across a wide spectrum of demographics and psychographics, so to speak. We know, and you probably know the term cultural creative.
Yes.
Yeah. You know, we know that the cultural creatives exist, and we know that they do have a particular set of values and lifestyle preferences, which, if you extrapolate, would lead you to conclude that they also have a particular set of entertainment media values and preferences. And it is true that they do. And You alluded to it at the top of the show when you said it was kind of hard for you to find anything that you wanted to watch on television. And for me, I would say not only television, but, you know, come Thursday and the LA Weekly comes out, or the Santa Barbara Weekly?
New Times. I'm sorry, the News Press.
News Press. Well, no, what's the alternative paper there?
The alternative, there used to be the Daily Sound. I'm trying to think of, possibly the Montecito Journal. There's the Independent, I believe it is.
Yeah, you're right. It's the Independent. So, you know, come Thursday, the LA Weekly and the Santa Barbara Independent come out, and you're looking through it. It's like, yeah, I wonder what films are opening this week and what I can see. And it's kind of like a carryover from last week and the week before, and mm-hmm. couple, two, three new films that opened, I don't have an interest in seeing.
Yeah.
And I would like to be able to, you know, go to the theater and see a film that I, you know, that I'm looking forward to seeing.
Yeah.
And by the way, I believe there's a new definition of theater. Look, I think a lot of us in this particular space, you know, we enjoy going to the theater, but we also have to contend with, you know, people who are talking with lights from cell phones mm-hmm. and with, you know, the crunching of food and the wrestling of paper bags and what have you. And it's not the most, you know, it's not the nicest experience in the world. On the other hand, I don't necessarily just want to stay at home watching, you know, a video on my big screen TV or computer or whatever
right.
With my partner.
Yeah.
I think there's something in the middle of that. And what I think it is it's where a group of people comes together with the intention of sharing a transformational experience, having that experience, and then afterwards being able to dialogue with one another about it, and then to carry the wisdom of that experience out into the world. And it could be a group of 10 people, 5 or 10 people. It could be a group of 100 or 1,000 people. They could be in a boardroom. They could be in a yoga studio. They could be in a church or a synagogue. They could be in any number of places. But I believe that is the new theater. It is community-based experience.
Yeah.
It's where the tribe comes together to share this transformational experience. And we're actually creating a distribution network made up of those community venues where people can program transformational films and other types of content and then have the opportunity to share it, dialogue about it, and carry it out into the world.
And I have to say that I've had these experiences where after collectively watching a film in a theater that was really, really good, it is such a charge when the entire audience applauds.
Yes.
And I've had that happen on a couple of occasions. I wanted to go back to something that you mentioned in regards to faith-based films. In my career, early on, I worked for a Christian broadcasting radio station in the Phoenix area in Arizona. And at the time, the movie The Last Temptation of Christ came out, mm-hmm. based upon the book by Kazantzakis. And we, as a radio station, under the management direction, took offense and took opposition and ran promos and what have you to get people not to go see it. And that all kinds of accusations and allegations were made about the script and about the storyline and on and on and on and on. The more that went on, the curiouser I got about this film. And so I went to see it. But I didn't stop there. I got the book by Kazantzakis, mm-hmm. and I didn't have to go very far into the book. All I read was like the preface, and I will summarize and paraphrase what Kazantzakis said. These are just my musings. I'm not saying this is the truth. These are just my musings. And I thought, oh my God, all of this fervor and energy over a film that was based upon the imaginings of one man.
Yeah.
Now, I didn't think the film was that great, but I sat through it and I watched it. I thought it was an interesting storyline, but I put less into the coffers of the filmmakers than the protesters did, because they were parking in the parking lots across the street from the theater or the production company where the movie was made, and they were paying the parking, the fees. And I just thought, there's something wrong. There's a disconnect here. People haven't even seen the script and they're commenting on it. How can they do that? Of course, there were people who voted on a healthcare plan of 1,000 pages. They never read it, but they voted yes on it. So, you know, it's part of human nature, I guess. But I'm wondering, in that light, in terms of, I'll use the term accuracy in media, accuracy in entertainment. Now, if you're making a fictional story, there is no such thing as accuracy. It is what you choose it to be, because it's fiction. but when you're making, for example, the movie, I'm trying to remember now, this one movie that came out, it was the story of one the movie about Facebook.
Oh, yes, social media.
And social media. And that there were people who just, the founder of Facebook actually said, hey, wait a minute. No, that's not the way it went down with my girlfriend. But the entertainment industry, in order to sell tickets, they embellished. Yeah. They exaggerated. Or, I don't know, can I say they lied? You know? And I think that's also one of the frustrations that we have, is whether we're being told, if it's fiction, there's no truth to be told. Maybe there's a message there. It's metaphorical and what have you. But when you're trying to tell a story about an event, I wonder about Zero Dark Thirty. How much of that is really the truth? And how much of it is fiction? We don't know, because we don't know what went on. We weren't there. I think that a lot of folks are they like, as you said, we're programmed, if you will, to like this stuff.
I think when it's well done, again, I think it resonates with kind of the core of our being in a way.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's there. What is that principle in homeopathics? Like attracts like, or something like that.
Right. Exactly.
You know, or even in the field of physics, the idea of sympathetic vibration, and it's where you, let's say you put two guitars side by side, and you stimulate one of the guitar strings, and then the other guitar string starts to vibrate in sympathetic resonance with it.
Right.
A lot of creative expression, I remember going to the Louvre Museum and seeing the Mona Lisa, and I remember seeing Van Gogh's Starry Night at the Van Gogh Museum in Amsterdam, and I remember sitting in front of these works and being mesmerized and feeling the stirring of my being within stirring. It's being stimulated by this, by seeing, you know, the Mona Lisa and Starry Night, and knowing as I do that these works were imbued with the consciousness of the painters.
Mm-hmm.
That was their particular gift to us.
Yeah.
To stimulate us to have that same experience that they were having at the time they created that work. So I think the best creative works, whatever they're expressing, they touch us deeply. They touch the core of our being. They stimulate the core of our being. They allow that awakening to happen. They take us to a place that we may not visit often, or that we've maybe not even ever visited, and they awaken us in that way. I think that's the power of creative media. And certainly, that's on kind of a nonverbal level,
yeah.
And even on a more manifest or expressed level. Let's say in the case of the lyrics to a song.
Yeah.
There are many people who know the lyrics to a song, and they've memorized them, and for whatever reason, those lyrics touch that person deeply. They know them by heart, and those lyrics are imbued with all kinds of meaning for that person. So all of these different forms of creative expression are none other than expressions of our creative being.
And I have to believe, John, that you have had this experience. Now, this may sound funny. I've had the experience of producing promos for a sporting event. specifically the post-championship promotional announcement, taking the audio from the play-by-play, mixing it all together and so forth, and then you come out the end and they've won it and everybody's going crazy and everything, and it's only 30 seconds. But I'm sure that you've had this experience where you go back and you watch what you've produced. I go back and I listen to that promo. I kid you not, John, I had nothing to do with the ball game. I just put these pieces of audio together. I get a lump in my throat and a tear in my eye. Over that experience that I shared long distance with those players. They did it. And it's like, wow, what in the world? I even asked the question, what in the world is going on with me? This is a promo for a sporting event I had nothing to do with. I produced the promo. Why do I have tears in my eyes?
Yeah. Well, you know, I can't help but wonder if that, you know, if there is a moment of transcendence involved in that kind of experience, where we transcend our individual conditioned boundaries, and for a moment we touch being, we touch the core of who we are, which is the core of everybody. It points to our interconnectedness. So I can't help but wonder if that kind of experience is really a momentary experience of that touching of being, that which connects all of us.
And you've had that experience too, haven't you?
I have. I have in many different ways. I actually was just speaking with somebody this morning and recalling having had that experience when I was a musician at a very young age, and experiencing this moment of interconnectedness and transcendence. And it was, what was coming out was this perfect, or at least it felt like a perfect expression of that moment. And I had nothing to do with it. I felt separate from it. Not emotionally separate, but simply I was a witness. I was watching, you know, this emergence that was occurring, this spontaneous act of creation that was occurring.
It is, without a doubt, most extraordinary. And I think in terms of these sporting analogies, when some of these players, whether it be, well, it doesn't matter what the sport is, they get in what they refer to as the zone.
The zone, yeah.
And I know that we all share that common experience where I've had people come in and they throw on the counter all of these little bits and pieces of what they want to put together. Yeah, I want to put together a half-hour show. And I'm, you know, and of course my first reaction is, well, have you timed any of this stuff out? Do you know how much material you have and so on and so forth? And they said, well, no. I said, all right, no worries. Let's start creating. And all of a sudden the program is finished. Everything fit into that 30-minute puzzle.
Yes.
And it just works.
Well, you know, doesn't that kind of experience point to the possibility of a creative intelligence that's actually directing everything?
Yeah.
And somehow we're along for the ride, and sometimes we may not know we're there, that we're even taking the ride. We take the journey very seriously.
Oh, yeah.
But we're actually just a passenger, and, you know, a lot of the esoteric literature suggests that.
Well, and that's what I say about this show.
Yeah. And I think a lot of creative artists will attest to this also. I think people in the creative arts who, you know, choose the arts and entertainment or media as a way of expressing themselves can attest to the experience that we've just been discussing.
Well, in watching that video clip of John Kerry in his presentation there at the last Gate event, I would have to say he was in that zone. But he, like many, I think, and only he can answer the question, I can't, but I think he is exactly where he's supposed to be. His purpose in life is doing what he's doing. And so when he gets into that zone, it's no surprise, because he's living on purpose. He's where he's supposed to be.
I think you're absolutely right, and I think Jim would probably concur with you. And the times I've been around him, when one can actually sense a creative energy around people who are truly living in the zone frequently. There is a unique kind of energy surrounding them, and they live their lives creatively, not just when they're quote unquote doing their art, but whether they're, you know, cooking vegetables or mm-hmm. doing the laundry, ordinary everyday kinds of things, they tend to bring that creative sensibility to that. And everything, in a sense, becomes an expression of that.
Not to be religious in nature necessarily, but I think it was Teresa of Avila who said that God resides among the pots and the pans.
Well, yes, and I think, you know, sort of a Buddhist corollary to that is the idea of chop wood, carry water. Before enlightenment, chop wood, carry water. After enlightenment, you know, that there is that in ordinary, that we find our salvation, that we find our enlightenment, if you will, in the simple acts of everyday life and living.
Well,
I happen to believe, you know, I resonate most deeply with that in the arena of arts, of entertainment, media, and the arts. For me, these are vehicles where that creative energy is so manifest and so available and so unobstructed and unobscured. And it's for me personally, these are the best vehicles for the unveiling of consciousness. And so, you know, when you're listening to music, I mean, what you're really doing is starting to touch the core of your being when you really relate to a song, whether it's the Beatles or Beethoven.
Yeah. Well, and I think that it answers the question that I haven't really been asking, but it kind of came up, and that is, why is it that I enjoy going to the theater so much? And I did this back in Phoenix. I was very privileged to be connected with a producer who would get me tickets to go to one of the theaters there, the Herberger. And it didn't matter which stage they were performing on, and it didn't matter really what the production was. I just loved being there, and I think it had to do with the fact that I was around these cultural, creative people, these people who were involved in that process of transformation through the characters. I've even wanted to talk with actors and say, what has happened? What happens to you when you're up there on stage or you're in front of the camera? What's, if anything, what's going on in your psyche, not your mind, because I know that they're trying to remember their lines, for one. There must be a transformational experience in that process.
Yes. Yes. Well, there is some kind of inner experience, I think. And I think it is that experience that causes one to come back time and again to that experience. So, you know, when one gets up on a stage or when one makes a movie or creates a piece of music or writes poetry, whatever the creative act is, there is something in that act itself, I think, that keeps bringing the artist, in the broad sense of the word, you know, keeps them coming back for more and more and more. And I've said it before in this interview, I think it's because these experiences allow us to touch more of the core of our life. And I think, you know, and again, using a Buddhist term, dharma, I think, you know, that becomes, you know, our dharma. Mm-hmm. That is what we do in this life. And for someone, it may be conducting business. For someone else, it may be being a teacher and teaching. And then still for others, it is the creative arts and the manifestations that they bring.
I have to say that I have thoroughly enjoyed this interview. I have
me too. Thank you very much.
I have three more questions for you.
Please.
And you can keep them short or long answers. Doesn't matter to me. Who is John Rotz?
I could answer that question, and probably my pause was the answer.
Which, by the way, is usually the standard moment after.
Yes. But I think in that pause, there is a level of reflective silence, and there's also just silence itself. And I think once when you ask the question, and then there's that moment of reflective pause, and then I drop from there just into the state of silence, that's who John is. That's who we all are. That is the meeting point. That is that which binds us all together. That is what interconnects us. On a grosser level of expression, you know, John is many things, and, you know, good and bad, so to speak, on the manifest level. And yet, in the face of that silence, that is the meeting ground of all of it. And I tend to relate to that more and more these days. And then on the creative side, John is a musician. John loves marbled paper and paper marbling. John loves photography. He loves reading. He loves hiking. He loves flying airplanes. Many, many things. He loves listening to music. He loves traveling, all of those kinds of things. But that is really, you know, just an expression of that core being. And I think I adore that above anything else. And I find myself these days oftentimes just sitting and being, you know, immersed in that being and enjoying that and loving everybody and everything in that state.
This next question asks you to codify down what we've just been talking about over the last hour in this. What is it that you hope to or want to achieve through the work that you are doing?
Transforming the world by transforming entertainment and media.
And how powerful are we as human beings in your perspective?
On the one hand, not as powerful as we think we are. On the other hand, a lot more powerful than we think we are. I think the answer to that lies someplace in the middle of that. And I think that we tend to undervalue our power when we should be valuing it and using it for the benefit of the world.
Yeah.
And when we're using more of the negative side of things, or when the negative side tends to arise in us, that's when I think we're abusing that power and thinking that we're much greater than we are.
Well, I have to, again, thank you for sharing your time and your story with us here on the program.
Thank
and
you.
I look forward to having you back again to further this discussion. If not, if you find your way, I'm sure you've been here many times to the Santa Barbara area.
Yes.
Please let me know. We can sit down face-to-face in studio and do this again as well.
I would enjoy that, and I'll be there sometime in February, so I'll give you a call.
Fantastic. I'm Richard Dugan, and my guest has been John Rotz. He is the founder of GATE, Global Alliance for Transforming, why is that hard to say, entertainment. And you can go to gatecommunity.org and find out more. Until next Saturday at this same time, I'm Richard Dugan for Tell Me Your Story, Love to Lal.